Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program I talk about the evolution of our consciousness, how we are shifting as a planetary race, and that includes our body and mind and spirit. And tonight's guest is going to, I feel, ground us in our bodies. His name is Stuart Mark Berlin, and we're going to be talking about sex magic. So thank you, Stuart, for being here.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
Let's just jump into it. When you say sex magic, well, so many things come to mind, but I think you can define that a little bit, and then we'll talk about what really the role of the new role or the old role of the man in relationship to the woman can be. So how do you define sex magic?
I define sex magic as using the brain's inherent ability to move from the adrenaline sex to oxytocin sex. And that is something that takes place in the brain. It involves some very specific neurological phenomenon, and it allows an individual to take control of their brain's development. So sex magic is using sex for transformation of human consciousness.
I always thought that the brain was, in the Taoist practice, in the Hindu practice, there's a direct relationship to the sexual act and consciousness and enlightenment. And so we're not taught that physiological technology. How do we actually do it? What's the act of doing that transformation you just talked about?
Well, it's essentially combining sexuality and meditation. And both orgasm and meditation, when looked at from modern neuroscience, involves the maximal stimulation of the sympathetic nervous system, which is fight or flight, and at the same time, the parasympathetic nervous system, which is protect and conserve. And what happens when both of these are maximally stimulated is that you have a change in neuronal flow, so that the body's proprioceptive sense of where you are in space and time goes away. So someone who is meditating and achieves divine union or unio mystico no longer has the experience of being in their body. The same thing with orgasm, that during that, your feelings that come in from your hands, your back, your taste, all of those things changes so that you are just, sometimes, for example, just feel the sensations in the genitals as the only thing that exists. And when you combine meditation and sex at the same time, then you can have an experience that is very prolonged, that lasts for a very, very long period of time, and then can be used with some content for healing purposes and the unification of the divine male and the divine female, and all sorts of things.
But
I know that's very scientific, but it's in reality, experientially, understanding that makes it really easy. And when you are experiencing it and you have the understanding of what you're experiencing it, it allows you to go much further than you otherwise would.
So what kind of meditation does one need to do? I would assume what the men do is different than what the women do. So can you go into like the specifics of the different roles, the different energies, and the different types of ways of going into these like states of consciousness?
Well, for me, I have a prayer that I say in Hebrew, Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, which is a prayer that was specifically given to me for my path, and that prayer unifies divinity and unifies the masculine and the feminine. Many people sometimes just use a vocalization, other people might have a different mantra that might be just a sound. But for me, that's the prayer that I use. And in fact, I use that prayer in many different aspects, not just sex. I use it when I meditate all the time. I use it when I swim. I use it when I paint. But usually for women, when they're in this state, they're very suggestible, and they're not really having any thought. And so it's the male partner who is directing their orgasms to go further and further and further, and then telling them that they're beautiful, telling them that they're loved, telling them that they are a manifestation of the divine feminine, of the goddess.
In this practice, I mean, what I heard about, it starts with oral sex in a way. The men are performing oral sex on the women, and it's getting the women to stay as the man does his own form of connecting to the divine. Is that right?
Well, it doesn't really start there, but the oral sex is certainly a huge part of it. There are many women who will only orgasm from oral sex, and the anatomy of a woman between the clitoris, the goddess spot, and the cervix is like a symphony orchestra. And when I say the goddess spot, you have to understand that all of the embryological tissue that in a man becomes the penis is present in a woman. So the clitoris would correspond to the head of the penis. But everything else is actually inside, internally, even though you don't necessarily see it. And not all of it is inside the vagina. A lot of it is outside and surrounding the vagina. So you don't necessarily see and feel it, but the more and more a woman gets excited and the more she orgasms, and this is one of the reasons why some people still don't think the G-spot exists, is because very often you don't find it until a woman's already started to or have like one or two clitoral orgasms. But I usually like to start with, before you ever make love, in your conversations with the woman, so you are becoming known and knowing her, so that you are becoming trustworthy, you're becoming acceptable to her, and so you're finding out about each other. So there's a lot of stuff that happens, you know, first, and then there's, you know, eye gazing and massage and touch. But when you're talking about the actual really intense sexually stimulating, I actually like to start with breast stimulation, because when a woman's breasts are suckled, whether it's a baby who is suckling or a man or a woman for that matter, it releases oxytocin in the hypothalamus and bloodstream of both the woman whose breasts are being suckled and the man who is suckling. And that process of suckling and having simultaneous release of oxytocin brings the two brains into synchronization. So many people, for example, when they think of their mother, they have a psychic bond, and that developed when they were infants. That same exact psychic bond between brains is developed between lovers when they do a lot of breast stimulation and nursing, so that there is that recapitulation, if you will, within the brain of what happened in infancy in terms of intimacy and bonding. And it's interesting that the same neuromodulator, oxytocin, is not only the neuromodulator of bonding between a mother and child, but it's also the neuromodulator of orgasm. And so having that take place first and having that deep bonding occur, and then moving to genital massage, massaging the mound of Venus, playing with the pubic hair so you're stimulating gently, and then going to clitoral stimulation, G-spot stimulation, cervical stimulation, and then going to cunnilingus after that, so that your partner is already orgasming for you, several times before you're starting the Kundalini, and you also are in this deep bonding state. And yes, I say that mantra during the breath sucking and also the Kundalini.
Now, why, if you're suckling a woman's breast, why is the oxytocin released from the man? Just because of the sexual stimulation the man gets from, or is there some physiological chemicals besides just the mental ideas?
It's not a psychological process. It's a physiological process. It's a recapitulation of what happens between a mother and her infant. Because a baby who is suckling on the mother's breast has oxytocin released in their brain, and so the man is, during that period of time, being in that role, and then that kind of, after about 3, 4, 5 minutes, it becomes intensely sexual because it's a sexual stimulation. So there's what's happening in terms of the physiological release of a neuromodulator in the brain, and there's also the culturally appropriate sexual situation between lovers. So, for example, many women, when they breastfeed, have no sexual stimulation at all, but some do. But in a situation where it's a man, there's a lot of sexual stimulation, and it's appropriate, so. But it works on the same neuromodulator.
So I get that, and I think the way you're talking about sex and the whole build-up, it doesn't then become a boring routine. Well, you do this, and it stays constantly fresh and alive.
Stay fresh and alive, but it gets better every time, because what you're doing is making a link between brains that doesn't go away. And so each time you have a sexual encounter, it gets stronger, and at the same time, you have an intent. You have what in Kabbalah is called a kavanah, where your intent is not only having this be an experience between two people, but between spirit, between sacredness, between souls. And in very advanced sex magic that I do, it involves filling what I call liminal time with orgasmic bliss and literally healing the world, so that the orgasms travel from the woman's yoni up into her heart, expanding our heart's ability to receive love so that the heart becomes a fountain. And you've seen fountains that are continuously bubbling over with water. Well, the heart can be like that, continuously bubbling over with love. So many people kind of feel that they have a limited amount of love to give, and they sometimes feel like somebody is asking for too much from them. But if you're connected to the source of all love and nurturance, then your heart becomes an infinite source, and there can't be too much love. The more love that your heart gives out, the more love your heart can be a conduit for. And then the love travels, the orgasm travels from your heart up into the mind brain, balancing the mind brain, opening the crown, and allowing that love to travel out into the world, both directed at people you want to heal, but also to people you don't know, and also to other times and dimensions as well.
Now, how do you, I know that's advanced, but can you just make a link between, most people have sex if they have a physical experience, and I know on this program I've talked about tantra and all that, but I really want to get from you how you link the spirit, those higher chakras, the integration of the body soul together into the orgasmic bliss. I mean, how do you call in spirit? I mean, obviously it's there, but is there something specific that you're in touch with, or your intent has, that calls on these, the unification of the body, mind, spirit?
And that has to do with the prayer, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, so that your partner's body, and especially her yoni, becomes the temple that you're praying on and through. So, you know, there are lots of different metaphors you can use. Her body becomes an instrument, like a Stradivarius violin, or it becomes a symphony orchestra, or it becomes the goddess herself. So that you are making love both to the individual woman you know in all of her specificity, and at the same time, you are worshiping the Divine Mother, the source of all love, all nurturance, all creativity. We live in an amazingly beautiful world. There is tremendous abundance. And, you know, most people who are spiritually evolved have a tremendous feeling of gratitude. And many people wish there would be a way to express that gratitude. And the way that I do it is by making love to my partner, so that my partner becomes the goddess herself, and I can express my appreciation and love and gratitude for creation, for the love that exists in the world, into her, and through her, into the goddess. And so my partner is feeling the presence of the divine feminine, which of course makes her feel intensely beautiful, makes her feel intensely loved, and at the same time opens up her creativity so she can start to either, and it's very individual how a woman will respond in terms of her visions that she has, you know, and whether how her creativity is expressed.
So a lot of men, I would say, take a lot of the energy in sexuality and put it immediately into their own pleasure. They're going for intercourse, and it sounds like what you're saying to the men is use that sexual energy that is kind of moving through you and put that into the woman without trying to get your own fulfillment.
So for example, in this oxytocin state, I am not in really the least interested in ejaculating. I am interested in having my penis become a true lingam or wand of light so that this divine energy that I'm experiencing goes into me through my crown. And this is one thing that's a little different from my magic, from maybe the more, tantric ideas where it starts with the kundalini. This is not starting with the kundalini. This is coming from the crown, because I've been doing years and years of meditation. And interesting, Israel Regardi, who some people may know, was at one time a student of Aleister Crowley, and then who I believe greatly surpassed him, had a mantra that was also based on the Tree of Life and also brought the energy in from his crown. So he never had any of those problems that can be associated with kundalini energy that's kind of off on its own. So it really all starts with ejaculatory control, so that ejaculation is not really an issue. And so being erect inside of her, and, you know, when we were talking, we never even got there. We went from, you know, touch and kissing to breath stimulation to oral, to yoni massage, and then to oral sex. And then when a man penetrates her, he's really focusing on the energy going back and forth, kind of like an alternating current that goes up through both participants' crown and down into each other and then back the other way.
Right. So when the penis is inside the vagina, when the yoni isn't up, when the lingam is inside the yoni, are you focusing on the image of that, or are you just kind of like picturing that kind of current coming through both of you, sort of?
I call it the
microcosmic orbit.
I feel it, and usually I'm talking with my when I have a breast in my mouth or a yoni in my mouth, I'm not talking. I might be saying my mantra, but I can't talk. But when my lingam is inside of my partner, then I talk to her, and that's when you talk about things that only the two of you know, and you use your penis to stimulate the G-spot using your hand to move it, or the cervix when you're doing deep thrusting, or sometimes you're just staying inside without moving at all and just moving your hips. And, you know, your legs can be intertwined. And, you know, it's great to do eye gazing then, you know. And one of the things I really like then is having your left eye, which is connected to your right brain, looking into her left eye so that your right brains are in sync and you're talking to her. And this is when she's so suggestible because she's feeling so wonderful and she's in such a state of oxytocin excess that you can do tremendous healing. And so based on how you know your partner and you're having her become a conduit for this energy to go out into the world, healing the world, that you can then take any pain and suffering that she has, some kind of trauma from her childhood, from her past, something you know about, you know, and here's when knowing your partner is important. And so then what you do is you hook on whatever pain and suffering might be present in her brain, and you attach it to her orgasms that are traveling out the top of her head. And so she's in divine service. She's put her orgasm to heal the world, and in the process of that, she is healed herself, because what oxytocin does that no other neuromodulator does is increase the brain's neuroplasticity, which means it can erase etched neural nets in the brain, because most of the time, whatever happens to us in our childhood is deeply engraved in our brain, in our neural net. But with this transformative, alchemical state, those can be erased. So when you say, and that pain and suffering, and you're specific in what you're talking about with your partner, latches on to your orgasms and is going out into the universe, not only healing the world, but the process of being in divine service heals her, and it heals you as well.
So you, that takes some time. I would imagine it takes some time of being with someone and working and getting to know their body and getting to know them. I mean, that's...
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm always amazed when I hear about people in relationships saying that their sex life becomes stale. For me, the longer I'm in a relationship with someone, the more I know them, the better it becomes, because the more you know them, the more you know their history, the more you know their body, so that, you know, my partner that I live with, she can just touch my kundalini and begin to orgasm because she feels the energy coming out of me. And, you know, so she pretty much goes into a state of constant orgasm from the moment we begin, because it's, you know, learned. When you're with someone and you know their body, there's learning that takes place from one time to the next. And how I describe liminal time is that it's as if all the times you've been making love are still there, and you just slipped right into it, right where the last episode ended, so that your experience is as if you've been making love for, you know, years.
When you said she touches your kundalini, you mean the spot of your sacrum? Is that what you mean? Or what do you mean?
Yeah. So if she were to just touch me there, and I've been in a meditative state, so it's vibrating, my partner will orgasm.
But it sounds like you have a huge current flowing through your body most of the time anyway, right?
That's pretty much true, yeah.
And so would you say you're sort of in an orgasmic state for most of the day?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say that I'm meditative much of the day, and it's when I am actually making love and my partner is orgasming and I'm sharing her orgasm that I'm actually what I would call in an orgasmic state. But I do tend to be in what I call high testosterone, high oxytocin, high endorphin state most of the time, because one of the advantages of living this kind of sex magic life is that it takes care of the health issues that many men develop. what very few people know is that after age 30, men only make testosterone from their testicles during arousal, which is how they taught it in medical school, but that really means during an erection. So since our culture is foreign to this type of tantric, sex magic, Kabbalistic, alchemical ideas, most men learn in adolescence, for example, that when they're masturbating to ejaculate as quickly as possible so they're not seen, you know, they may not have a great place to do that. They may be in the shower. They don't want to be discovered. So there's kind of a tendency to be fast about it. And if you talk to women, you know, the numbers are something like 85% of men will ejaculate within 5 minutes or many times a lot less. So if you have a man after 30 who doesn't spend a lot of time in erection but ejaculates within 5 minutes, well, that's the only amount of time he's making testosterone. Whereas if you have someone who has developed control of their organ, excuse me, and it's not an issue to ejaculate quickly, but really ejaculation is not a big deal, the staying in the state of shared bliss is, well, that person is making testosterone for all that time. And so I first really started paying close attention to this when I was 34, and at that time my testicular volume was the pretty standard 20 to 25 cc's that most healthy adult men have, whereas now my testicular volume is like 40 to 45 cc's, much larger.
But do you ever ejaculate, or do you keep it pretty much?
No, I do ejaculate, and part of the reason I ejaculate is because my partners like me to ejaculate. So, you know, my partner enjoys it when I ejaculate. So I will ejaculate for her pleasure as well as my own. And when I do ejaculate, I never just stop. Then I have a, on my website, tantrickkabbalah.com, you can listen to my mantra in an expanded form, and then we will embrace, intertwined, and I will say that mantra out loud while I'm in that state of having just ejaculated.
But do you feel drained when you ejaculate? Are you energized because you're ejaculating in the vibratory space of the yoni itself?
Most of the time when I have sex, I'm energized. It doesn't tire me out. It makes me more energetic.
Because, you know, the Taoists say to never ejaculate unless you
right.
want to procreate.
Right. I would disagree with that. Just from a Western scientific point of view, the testicle is a gland, and this gland's become obstructed, and not ejaculating would be considered a form of obstruction, and you have a retention of semen and sperm, and, you know, there's some concern that, you know, like when men have their vas deferens tied, that, you know, there can be some biological problems. So I think all glands should be emptied on a regular basis, but the goal should not be ejaculation. The goal should be the process, and really it's the oxytocin orgasm, which women have much easier than men, and men can learn to do that when they combine it with meditation, and especially when they learn to control their ejaculation.
But, I mean, you don't ejaculate every time you have sex. You can have sex for, I mean, long times, hours and hours, and
right.
then, or days, right?
Right. I would say I ejaculate like once or twice a week, and I would say I have sex like 3 or 4 times every day.
Uh-huh. I see. And so, but the main thing, it sounds like, it's the woman's orgasm that really connects both partners to the source,
Would you say that to the person?
Exactly. So you are worshiping her as the manifestation of the divine feminine, of the goddess, of the Shekhinah, and you're focusing on her, you're talking to her, you are touching her, you are releasing oxytocin when you're massaging her, when you're nursing her, suckling her, rubbing her, kissing her, eye-gazing, talking to her, and of course during direct genital stimulation, whether it's your hands or your mouth. And I generally try and use my left hand as much as possible because that is connected to the right brain and is and the right brain is the more mystical side, the more feminine side of the brain.
But the magic happens when you put an intent into the orgasm. Is that where the magic comes in?
The magic really comes in the sense that, think of it as the tide at the ocean, and each wave is bringing energy to the shore. And every time you have sex, you are doing that, and all these times connect to one another. They don't become separated and isolated. So the magic is ongoing in your attitude about sex in general, your attitude about your partner, feelings of love. There's no magic without love. It's not done with bodies. It's done with souls. It's done with ensoulment. And, you know, I have a whole group of theories about brain states and different aspects of the soul. So, you know, some people who are uncomfortable with the word soul might feel more comfortable with the word brain state. But they are definitely, you know, an altered state of consciousness that you learn how to develop. So magic is something that is ongoing in the relationship, ongoing in connecting all the sexual episodes together, and on having this intent of using sex for transformation for the individual involved and for the world and for the divinity, divine masculine and the divine feminine. So it's all connected. There's always kind of more that each time you do this, you can go further than you ever went before, and you can do that because you're connecting to everything you've already done. So you're not starting over every time. You're not starting from scratch.
Right. You know, as you're talking, it seems like there is, and I know you're into the Kabbalah, there seems to be a natural correlation between the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life, the body, orgasm, and the sephira at different stages or brain states are connected to different parts of the Tree of Life. And
exactly.
And it seems so natural. And why, well, you can go through the different things, but why aren't people talking about this, or the Tree of Life and the Kabbalah, in terms of the body and orgasm? I know it's radical, but why aren't people saying this?
Well, we live in a general culture that is very misogynist, anti-women, very anti-sex, and people want citizens to behave, to go to work, to go to war, to do what they're told. They don't want a population full of sex magicians who think for themselves. So our society doesn't really embrace this, and, you know, Judaism has been around for 4,000 years. My own personal idea is that when it started with Abraham and Sarah, they started as sex magic, that they were doing this, and that that's what it was all about, and that what happens with many religions, they're started off by people who are one way, and then it gets taken over by priests, and the priests are more interested in their control, their power, and so they try and keep this information secret and hidden and don't want to share it. So I think that has to do with the politics and culture of human nature rather than what's available and what's possible.
life.
You're right. Once
now,
you start to think about this, it all makes sense. Go ahead.
The Kabbalah was the mystical aspect that sort of transcended the priesthood in a way, didn't it?
Well, sure. The most people think of Kabbalah as starting in the Middle Ages, you know, in the 11th, 12th century. The Zohar shows up right around 1290-something. But the individuals who follow this path are not the normative people who do what they're told and follow the rules. And
right.
In Judaism, the Kabbalah was not taught to women. It was only taught to men over age 40, only to men who had a position. So, you know, there's a certain degree of conservatism. And, in fact, many people think that Kabbalah started as a way of being conservative, of providing a structure that reinforced halakha, Jewish law, to do the commandments. But what happened is, and this is very true in spiritual experiences, what started out with a very conservative intent became radical. Because really what Kabbalah is to experience the divine feminine. And that's, you know, when you are directly connected to divinity yourself, then everything changes.
So that's a radical position to say that the Kabbalah was started to honor the divine feminine, because I think it's great. I think it's probably true, because all mystical teachings must acknowledge the great feminine essence, because without that, there is no mysticism. So.
Right, and in fact, I've heard Kabbalah described as the restoration of the divine feminine within Judaism.
Right. I mean...
Oh, this phone has a low battery. Let me switch phones.
Okay, sure.
Sure, hold on. I'm sorry. I hear this clicking, and now I know what it's from.
Okay. I'm talking to Stuart Mark Berlin, who's a Kabbalist. He's a sex magic expert, and we're just, this part of the conversation I really did want to get into more, because the Star of David is really the integration of the male and female energies, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. You have the male and female genital patterns, or called escutcheons, and they are superimposed. So the Jewish star is certainly the interpenetration of male and female energy. In the Sephirotic Tree of Life, you have Tiferet, which is the divine masculine, which on the tree is the heart and means beauty. And the Shekhinah, the divine feminine, is Malchut, which is the tenth or last Sephirot. But there's also an understanding that the six Sephirot above Malchut, which is Gedula, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yisod, combine into an expanded consciousness, which sometimes is called the Partsufim, sometimes is associated with the man sitting on the throne in Elijah's vision. But I like to think of it as the integrated divine masculine. And so the integrated divine masculine, and this is something that women always complain about. They say that men are not present. And most of the time when men are not present, it's because they're fragmented. And so a great deal of spiritual growth is to integrate oneself and integrate the divine masculine, so the divine masculine within the man is now worthy of being with the divine feminine, and then are able to join on all these different levels. And so it's a process of integration that's taking place within the individual, within the Sephirotic tree, between souls, between the actual divine masculine and divine feminine. So it's you know, there's the more and more intimacy there is, the more and more love there is, the more and more orgasmic bliss there is, the more integration and unity there is.
But how come Judaism, mainstream Judaism, and even Kabbalistic Judaism, what we know of, it's so disconnected from the feminine. The feminine is left out of it completely. What can we do? How can we bring it back? Or is it totally a lost cause?
Well, it's certainly not a lost cause, because if you were to agree with me, you would think that Judaism is a goddess religion, and that the essence of what Abraham and Sarah did was sex magic, which is what we've been talking about, and so that individual Jews in their relationships can recapitulate this and use this. And it's really there. I mean, my books talk about it. My first book is called Every Woman a Goddess, Every Man a Hero in Her Service. The sequel is Sexual Secrets of Tantra Kabbalah, Making Love. And then my third book, which I'm working on now, will go even further, and that one's called Circumcision, Sex Magic, and Ending Human Sacrifice. And so, yes, I think that this is all tied with a change in consciousness that is happening evolutionarily within humanity, which is the equalization between masculine and feminine, between the right and left brain. And then in Kabbalah, that's called Chaya consciousness. Chaya is spelled C-H-A-Y-A. And that is when you have both Tiferet and Shekhinah always with you, but they oscillate. So one moment, kind of like in quantum mechanics, when you have energy moving between spin up, spin down, or where a proton is, or an electron can move from one plane to another. That's exactly what's happening, so that you have both hemispheres much more integrated than the average person does, which then brings a complete change in purpose. And all of that is all about restoring the divine feminine within Judaism.
Well, I think I have to back up a little bit and try to understand your concept of God and goddess. I mean, it doesn't seem it's the traditional judgmental Jehovah, you know, they in heaven who then judges people on Judgment Day, I mean, which is sort of the traditional orthodox view of God, from what I know. What is God to you? What is that?
Well, to
like
me, God is when you're a kid and you go in a temple, you know, one of the first things that I remember was asking my rabbi. And I said, well, you know, I'm reading about Abraham, and Abraham talked to God. And today, anybody who talks to God is called a schizophrenic. So, I mean, how do we understand this? And, you know, of course, I didn't get a really good answer then. And in Judaism, a major change happened in the 1600s. There was somebody called... And I bet you don't even know about this story, called Sabbatai Tzvi. And he was thought to be the Messiah. And about half to three-quarters of all Jews in Europe and the Middle East thought this guy was the Messiah. And then he ended up being captured by the Sultan of Turkey and converting to Islam. And there was mass emotional, horror. And so... in response to that, Judaism became much more rational, and the mystical was really banned. Really, the only exception to that is Hasidism, which is really about the only group that kept that. And so you have, the Gaon of Vilna was very much opposed to Hasidism, and there was this emphasis that you're talking about on a masculine, judgmental, critical God, and on study and on following the law, and that clearly was dominant in the last several hundred years within Jewish practice. But there's always been this hidden stream of Kabbalah, which was where the divine feminine survived and has always been extremely sexual in its imagery. I mean, the Song of Songs is making love between God and man. Well, how do you make love between God and man? You do that when a man and a woman make love and bring God into the bed, so that the You know, one of the things I've always thought was very powerful in Judaism was when I was a little boy and I'd go to the Seder and I had an Orthodox family and we'd say, this was as if I was there. Well, that ability to make as if you were there is very powerful. It's a psychological, mental, gymnastic thing. So now you take that ability and you say, as if the goddess, the Shekhinah, is there in bed, not only in the bed, but in the body of my lover. And I am making love to my lover, who I love as a person, as an individual, who has flaws, who has strengths, who I have a history with. But I'm also making love to the source of all love, the source of all nurturance, the source of all creativity. I'm unifying the masculine and the feminine. I'm unifying the whore, the intensely sexual, orgasmic, with the mother, the nurturer, sustainer, unconditional lover. So all of those things in different concepts can be unified because you have that ability in a meditative state to hold them in your mind.
Right. I mean, I get it, and it's somehow your capacity to expand to those levels feels very liberating and opening and exciting, and because you've developed that for yourself in your own kind of understanding of who you are in relationship to the divine.
Right, but it's available to anyone else to do that as well. And what's really lovely is that any other man or woman can do that. Any other couple can make a commitment to bring divine sacredness into their bed. So their bed is their temple.
What? So would you say the best time to make love then is on a Friday night at sunset?
Well, there's definitely within Judaism the idea about Shabbos and the Shabbos mitzvah, which is making love, so, and the idea that you have an expanded soul on Shabbos. So the Litvak philosophers only made love on Shabbos. They didn't make love during the week. So, but there's certainly an expanded. But I make love pretty much every day, and I also am very tied to the moon. When the moon is full, the day, couple of days before the moon and a couple of days after, it's kind of like a very intoxicating presence of the divine feminine being in the world. And I have a cave, an ocean cave, that fills with water twice a day on the tides and empties with water twice a day, which is a very sacred sexual spot. And there are many spots like that all over the world. So the earth is feminine and the sky is masculine, and it's the union. So, for example, like if you look at Stonehenge or these other megaliths, in many of them, there is a yoni, a cowrie shell, carved on one of the stones, and during the solstice, the sun would strike the cowrie shell. And so it really was a symbolic union of masculine and feminine, the sky, the sun, and the earth coming together to fertilize the land. And Hieros Gamos, which is spelled H-I-E-R-O-S, Gamos, G-A-M-O-S, goes back to the matriarchal period in the late Neolithic, when the crone mother, the head of the temple, would have sex with a young man who was playing the role of the green man of the forest, and their sexual union would bring fertility. But we don't have those temples anymore, but we have men and women who have consciousness. And if they have the proper consciousness, they can bring that creativity into their life, into their artistic life, into their their family life, and just bring love and healing into the world. The world still definitely needs that, especially after 5,000 years of patriarchal misery.
Right, that has been perpetuated first by Judaism, I mean, as it kind of got away from the divine feminine. So how do we I mean, I know what you're saying. The earth is feminine and women are beautiful and should be worshipped. But how do we really bring the feminine into embodied? I mean, I guess the orgasm of the woman, all that. But, I mean, how do we bring it into form in the best way you can understand, you can explain it, you know?
Well, the best way to do that is to understand that the left brain, the linear, logical, sequential, hunter-killer part of the brain, and the right brain, which is holistic, mystical, musical, feminine, have different historical periods when they were emphasized, so that human culture was created roughly 35,000 years ago by postmenopausal women with the simultaneous appearance of the goddess sculptures that were excavated all over Europe, art, spirituality, and technology. And then roughly 5,000 years ago, the pendulum changed direction and male priests took over the world and had a new ideology. The divine masculine was no longer the green man of the forest, but was replaced by Thor and Zeus and, you know, the divine masculine as a sword wielder, as violence. And now we are at a new stage, especially since the last transit of Venus across the face of the sun. And that is the balance, the integration of masculine and feminine. And so anything that encourages in men the use of the right brain, like if you have a child, or you have a young son, and you want to take him to art museums, and you want to encourage creativity and art, and you want to encourage intimacy and emotional dexterity, that all activates the right brain. And the way our society has been developed is that young boys are then taken away from their mothers and brought into a school environment where they're bullied, where emotions are shamed, and you know, if they have those, they're called mama's boys, and so you have a trauma that takes place, and the purpose is to develop, you know, good soldiers and good workers. So when you have a consciousness that overcomes that cultural model, which is, you know, now very old, and replaces it by understanding that the left brain, science, and particularly evolutionary biology, quantum mechanics, and neurobiology now support and interconnect perfectly with the old right brain ideas of mysticism. Because science now talks about, we just found the Higgs boson, and we now understand that mass comes from a particle moving through a field, moving through the Higgs field, which is how mass enters into subatomic particles, and that's how protons and neutrons get mass. Well, you know, that's very, very different than the way the left brain sees the world. When you're talking about a field that everything is part of, then it's, you know, it's much more right brain. So what has happened is that the left brain, which then developed science, has now used that science to go back to what things were like before. So we can integrate all the advantages that humanity has from our different time periods and make something new that never existed before so that we can all be happy.
No, I agree. I like the paradigm you're presenting, and then how does orgasm add to that? I mean, where do you see orgasm?
Orgasm is critical to all of this, because when you think of orgasm, as I do, as the creation and maintenance of a prolonged oxytocin state, then you have the ability to take control of your brain's development, because oxytocin increases neuroplasticity, and oxytocin allows for the eraser of old traumatic messages, so that you then can use your sex life, your prolonged orgasmic life, orgasms that last for an hour at a time for day. So to heal both yourself and then also to realize that the paradigm that we are separate beings in separate tubes of flesh is not true. Because think of the Higgs boson moving through a field. We are a human being in a body, in a consciousness, but that consciousness can now, through orgasm with a partner, make it so that your brains are now not so separate anymore, so that you and your partner feel each other when you're not in the same room. When you're thinking of her, she thinks she knows you're thinking of her. When you're doing magic, that magic is felt by other people who know you. So that this is a way of connecting people to one another in a very powerful way and in a very transformative way, and that that healing not only takes place in your own life, but it also affects people that you're not even aware of.
So can you just talk about orgasm in terms of the spiritual connection, because on some level the orgasm is the connected to the totality of all consciousness. That's what the bliss is.
Exactly.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, so for example, there's, roughly 7 billion people in the world. And let's say at any one particular moment, there are 1 billion people having sex and experiencing orgasm. And if these people are enlightened and are saying a mantra like my mantra, Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, and actually many times I'll sing it. And when I sing it, it sounds like this. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. So all of those people are going somewhere that I call liminal time, and their energy is all connected, and they're all in the same place. That changes the world.
That mantra means means a specific thing for you, and
well, it has a specific meaning because it's their Hebrew words, and it's when I was a little boy, I learned to say the Shema Yisrael, which is Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. And when you say blessings, you say Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Melech, but so I combined the two, where it's Baruch Ata goes with the rest of the Shema. And actually, I didn't do it. It was something given to me in a meditative state. But it's so it translates now as Blessed art thou, our Lord, our God, our Lord is one. And so it's the unification of God. And the unification of God is the unification of masculine and feminine. Both.
And God being the divine spark in us all, not something outside of us.
Well, it's kind of flexible. I mean, some people think of God as, a being, the guy with the beard in the sky. I don't happen to think of God that way. But, when you're at a different developmental stage, you think of things differently. But I think of it as the energy that creates the world, that creates life, that creates wonder, that creates mystery, that creates magic, that creates art.
Right. And that's in us. That is part of us. That's not separate.
Right. And that doesn't die when our bodies die either. So it's in our brains, but it's not just our brains.
Right. But it's also our eternal essence as well. It's us in our soul level.
Right. And so, for example, one of the images that I've used in teaching this is think of two pencils, and you're bringing the two pencils together, and the two points, the leads of the pencils are touching each other. Well, the leads of the pencils might think that's all they are, but there's something a lot bigger than them going way back, and that's the divine. So if you think of yourself as an isolated being, then, and what's good for you, it's got to be bad for other people because, if there's one pie and you get two pieces, there's two pieces less for anybody else. If that's the consciousness that you have, you'll behave in a certain way. But if you believe that you are part of everyone else and that there's this massive energy of creativity and love that is dying to get into the world, and you are the portal for it, and you are the portal for it, especially when you are making love and facilitating a woman's orgasm, then your whole experience of life changes.
Yeah, yeah. So ultimately, what is the purpose of incarnation? What do you feel we're in the body for? On a picture level.
Well, there are, the idea that we've lived many lives and that we're here to learn and we're here to do what's called tikkun or repair. And, there are many levels of the soul. There's the body nefesh, there's the ruach, there's neshama, and then there's the part of the soul that is not individual anymore, which is chaya, which is the unification of Tiferet and Shekhinah. But I think that the story that I like the best is that we have bodies so that the divine can enjoy them with us. That God needs us to exist. That we are not just little playthings for divine energy, but we give divine energy a place to live and a place to share, so that when my partner is orgasming and the orgasms are traveling from one end of her body, from her yoni, up into her heart, up into her mind-brain, and then out into the universe, the goddess herself is there sharing it because she loves it, because she loves being made love to, because it's good for her, it's good for divinity, and then when it's good for her, it's good for the divine masculine who comes. And so, it's good to be in a body. There's nothing wrong about flesh. Flesh is beautiful. Flesh is wonderful. And I believe that if you were to ask why we exist, it's because we give tremendous pleasure to divinity when we use our bodies the proper way.
Beautiful, beautiful. Is this evolving, you feel? Because this has been, of course, it's the oldest story in the world, making love and the sexual
I think it has a lot to do with human evolution and specifically brain evolution. You've heard people talk about the reptilian brain. Humans never had a reptilian brain. A reptilian brain is the limbic system at the base of the brain, the amygdala, the supraventricular nuclei that are the nuclear acumens, all of those structures that allow for intense emotion, but humans have a neocortex, which allows abstract thought. So it's the combination, the basic human situation is the combination of intense emotion yoked to abstract thought. And then the prefrontal cortex evolved, and that probably started when humans created culture about 35,000 years ago and existed under the matriarchy. And then, but when it was being developed at that time, the right brain was dominant. In the last 5,000 years, the neocortex, the prefrontal cortex, has been evolving under left brain dominance. And now we are at a new stage in evolutionary history where we can have equality between the right and the left brain, so that we have people who don't just use their left brain, they use their right brain too. And we have people who don't just use their right brain, they use their left brain too. And these are both men and women. And so while it's true that, there's nothing new under the sun, that whole idea, it is new because it's in a new evolving consciousness based on brain evolution and how we use our brain. And how we choose to use our brains creates our brain. The brain is self-directing. So what you choose to listen to, what you choose to watch, what you choose to do makes changes in your brain. And if you choose to do sex magic and unify the divine masculine and the feminine and allow the god and the goddess, Tiferet and Shekhinah, to come into your bed when you're making love, your brain will never be the same.
So this is our evolution. How do you see our culture being different, living different, creating a new society of different values?
Well, I see it being completely different, where the patriarchal excesses of sequestration of wealth and violence literally falls to the wayside because there's nobody who thinks that way anymore, that we look at other people as manifestations of divinity. We look at them as mirrors for our own development. We look at them as having intensely important value, not because of what they do, but because of who they are, just for being human. And that we create a world where, number one, women have control of their own bodies. So women will choose to have sex when they want, with whoever they want, and not be contained by a marital structure. So that patriarchy will disappear, and we will no longer have classes of people that, you know, oh, he's a bastard, he doesn't have a good father, or nobody takes care of him. Whereas we all become each other's keepers. We all become one body. We are all one body with divinity inside of us when we practice this type of sex magic.
Great. Just talk a little bit about this new book you're writing about and how circumcision can influence our evolution and change the way sex can be performed.
Right. Well, the basic idea is that moving away from ejaculation to prolonged sexual intercourse allows a man to experience the oxytocin in his brain, experience the oxytocin orgasm of his lover, whereas when we lived roughly 200,000 years ago to 50,000 years ago, we lived as animals. We didn't have, you know, safe places to have sex. And if you're having meditative sex for an hour and there's saber-toothed cats around, you know, you might not live very long. So evolution provided the foreskin, whose evolutionary function is to provide intense pleasure leading to rapid ejaculation. So this probably started changing when culture started about 35,000 years ago, and we know that there's a disconnect in how our society does sex. We know that adolescent boys have their most intense sexual time of their life, and they don't have anybody to really to have sex with who cares about sex as much as they do with them. In our society, older women aren't interested in adolescents, and in fact, you know, according to the laws, that would be child abuse. And young girls aren't interested in sex with young boys the way young boys are. So most likely what happened was that older women who were at their sexual peak after menopause had sex with young boys in their adolescence, 13, 14, and taught them about sex. And since these same women were the priestesses in the temples, this is the matriarchal time period we're talking about, like 6,000 years ago, they were there when babies were born. And so they would notice when every once in a while a male baby would be born without a foreskin, which happens occasionally. And so they would know, and then they would be there 13 years later teaching this boy and see that he had a natural tendency not to ejaculate and could last longer. And so what eventually happened is that these women, these postmenopausal women, would have then created circumcision to make it so that boys could last longer when they were having intercourse, and that's where all of this originated. And
so what about the Bible and Abraham and the covenant of God?
I'm going to get to that. Abraham and Sarah are the first couple in Judaism, and I know, based on my reading of the Torah, that they did sex magic, because Abraham gave Sarah to Pharaoh in Egypt, and he tried to give Sarah to Abimelech of the Phoenicians, and Isaac tried to give his wife Rebekah to the same king Abimelech of the Phoenicians. And the only way to really understand that is to look at other cultures and in the time period, because, you know, we're talking 2000 BCE, which is 4,000 years ago, and we know that in those other cultures, the king would have sex with the priestess to bring fertility to the land, which is Eros Gamos. Well, that originates actually earlier than that, before there were kings, before there was patriarchy, when it was the crone having sex with the young man. But there's no way to really understand what Abraham and Sarah are doing in the Bible without understanding sex magic. Now, the covenant of Abraham is the removal of the foreskin, it's circumcision. And it says very clearly that anyone who does not participate in this is cut off from the people. So the only way to make sense of those two is to understand that sex magic is where it's at. Sex magic is what Judaism is all about. It's all about experiencing the divine individually, experientially, in sex magic, and that circumcision is a big part of that. Because it allows for, it enables sexual control. Now, circumcision by itself doesn't do all that much, but if you combine that with training in adolescence, I was fortunate enough to be self-trained because I read a book called The Sensuous Man when I was 11, and so I taught myself ejaculatory control. So when I lost my virginity at age 17, I already had ejaculatory control, but most people don't have that experience. So what my book is designed to do is to make it so that Jewish boys at their bar mitzvah are given a book where they can train themselves to have ejaculatory control, become sex magicians, and be able to experience divinity directly in their sex life as a mature man with their lovers.
What's the best way to have ejaculatory control? I mean, I know it's probably a whole course, but what do you suggest?
It's really very simple. It's really very simple. And in fact, it really should appeal to the Orthodox, because one of the things the Orthodox don't like about masturbation is that it results in ejaculation, the wasting of seed. So, and there's a tremendous amount of guilt in the Orthodox community over boys who masturbate. So what this does is it takes the natural urge to masturbate and combines it with training not to ejaculate, so that you bring yourself right to the point of ejaculation, but before you ejaculate, you grab your shaft of your penis right under the head, and you take two fingers, your index finger and your middle finger and your thumb, and you put it on the ventral and dorsal side, kind of like how you'd hold a shot glass, and you compress the penis, compressing the urethra, preventing ejaculation, but not losing the erection, so that you masturbate right up until the point, compress the penis so you don't ejaculate, and then go back to masturbating to maintain the erection. So masturbation becomes not rapid pleasuring to ejaculation, but becomes learning how to maintain an erection without ejaculation. And the Orthodox really should love that, because it will make it so that there's no sin, because the sin in masturbation, according to Halakha and the Orthodox, is ejaculation. So
just be on the ground, yeah.
So you're combining the covenant of Abraham with the ability to maintain an erection without ejaculating, which is the doorway to move from the adrenaline sex to oxytocin sex, combining meditation with sexuality, having the high oxytocin state. Now, they didn't know any of this back then 4,000 years ago. They didn't know about brain chemistry. They didn't have PET scans and functional MRIs like we do today. But that's one of the great advantages of being alive now, is we don't have to limit ourselves to what we know in our own culture now. We can look back in time, re-examine what they did in the past with the understanding of what science gives us now.
Wow. You'll be able to, it sounds like you have a great vision to
transform the world, change religion, and give people more pleasure, really.
Absolutely. That's correct. That's very correct.
Well, thank you. I think I've had some oxytocin released during the conversation. It's really
absolutely
nice.
That's very true. Oxytocin is released when people are communicating. Like, they've seen that women scientists who cooperate with each other much more than men do release oxytocin when they collaborate. When you massage someone, you release oxytocin. I know a woman who's a birthing educator who is a midwife. And she is very skilled at creating a high oxytocin state in herself. And then when she's doing her job as a midwife, she brings that to the woman in labor and might just hold her hand, and that stimulates the woman to have a higher oxytocin state, which makes labor and delivery much easier. So you're absolutely right.
Wow. Thank you. Stuart, what's the best way people can reach you?
My website is... TantricKabbalah.com, TantricKabbalah.com. I'm also at ResearchMD, ResearchMD at AOL.com. And I also have a blog, HeroInHerService.blogspot.com, Hero, H-E-R-O-I-N. HeroServerice. It's not heroin. It's heroinherservice.blogspot.com.
You should, thank you. You should come to New York and teach some classes here, especially to the Hasidic community. They would love it.
Well, I think that may very well be in the future.
But thank you for the conversation and for all the beautiful information and personal, you know, work you've done and that you've shared. So I appreciate you being so open. And
my pleasure.
Yeah. So I'll be in touch with you.
That'd be great. I look forward to it.
Thanks. So, and your website's also Stuart Mark Berlin. Isn't that how people can find you as well?
Yeah, it's the same. Tantra Kabbalah and Stuart Mark Berlin are the same.
Well, thank you. I'll be in touch, and I'll send you an email, too, when this this interview is posted, okay?
That'd be great.
Okay. Thanks for being a guest. I've been talking to Stuart Mark Berlin about Tantra and Kabbalah and how to transform your life and your partners into one of joy, abundance, and spiritual fulfillment. I'm Alan Steinfeld. This is New Realities, and if you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com, or you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening. Good night.